And if you would please stand and face the flag, we'll be led in the pledge by Mr. Barry Brannan.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Noah, you want to go first?
Sure. I have a couple of items here. One is the National ASTRAE program is holding another in their data sharing series. It's another meeting, presentation, discussion opportunity. This one will be focused on bacteria in Morro Bay and our watershed. It will be Wednesday, July 18th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Community Center, 1001 Kennedy Way. And the concept is bacteria in Morro Bay's watershed. How does it affect our shellfish operations, the monitoring results that they're receiving historically and currently, and then concepts for projects to help address and reduce the bacteria loads in the estuary. So anyone's welcome to attend those. And again, that's Wednesday, July 18th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. You can find more information at the Morro Bay National Estuary Program's website. Also wanted to draw your attention to a survey regarding the Morro Bay trees and the Urban Forest Management Plan goals survey that you may have received, hopefully, in the mail. This survey will be available also online through July 30th. And you can probably, if you haven't received this in the mail and aren't available to, can't get access to online, I'm sure you could go into the Public Services Department and pick up a copy. If you would like to access this online, I'd like to ask if we could have that be noted on the homepage, because if you just go to the city's website, you can't find it as of yet. But the online location currently is www.surveymonkey.com/s/Morro Bay Trees. So that would be a place to fill out this very quick survey, which will provide input regarding the draft of our urban forest management plan. And we definitely want to hear from you. And then the other thing I did want to follow up, it doesn't look like Mr. Schultz is here yet, so I may wait. It was in regards to the tabling action that we had at the last meeting and the Island Streets neighborhood traffic management plan. There was an inappropriate use of the Robert's Rules of Order, and Mr. Schultz had some comments about that, that if he shows up, I'll ask him to provide his review as an update to the public on.
Well, it's that time of year again, time to celebrate our city flower. August 24th and 25th will be Dahlia Days, and this year it'll be held right here in this building. Wine and cheese reception Friday night from 4 to 5 to 8. Dahlia Days on Saturday from 11 to 4. There will be art for sale. Down here we have some examples of some of the beautiful dahlia plants that will be for sale to help support the Garden Club scholarship program. So please plan to join us Friday and Saturday and enjoy the dahlia, August 24th and 25th. Thank you.
Good evening. Yes, thank you. Just one announcement is August 4th is Relay for Life at Morro Bay High School. And that starts, I believe, at 9 a.m. And I just want to acknowledge and thank all those. I see some members here this evening of the 4th of July committee. It was a phenomenal event, from the skate contest that started in the morning, the bike parade, all the way through the fireworks. It was great. Great day, and they really did a nice job. Thank you.
No, go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Schultz. Sorry to catch you here. We had talked about you providing an update regarding the Robert's Rules of Order and the decision that was made at the end of the last meeting regarding the Island Streets project.
Yes, at the last meeting there was a motion made at somewhat of a late hour to table an item. At the time was asked if there was able to be debated on that motion to table. My answer was that it is correct when you table do a motion to table. Or lay it on the table. It's not debatable, But unfortunately, under the circumstances, to table that motion was not the proper motion. A motion to table should only be done when there's an urgency matter or something else that needs to be taken up prior to that item, and then that's why it's not debatable. You just vote on the motion and you table it until a later time. Since that was the last item, there wasn't anything of urgency, so the actual motion to table was not the right time to do it. I apologize for not catching it that time. We don't come across that motion very often. It's disliked under Robert's Rules of Order just because it is.
Powerful members of our local fishing crew passed away, Neil Tobin, and I know they've yet to make arrangements for services for him, and I just wanted to acknowledge that. Neil's been on the waterfront for a long time.
Yeah, he was a great guy, and, you know, he was an elderly man, and he was out on the water every day, and he passed away on his boat out off of Cayucas, and I think he was a blessed man. Our business spot, anything else? Our business spot tonight is Mr. Brian French with Estero Bay Sustainable Solutions. If you'd like to step up and have your 3 minutes, Brian, we welcome you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is Brian French, and I am the owner of Estero Bay Sustainable Solutions. I'd like to thank you all for the opportunity to be here tonight to tell you a little bit about my business. I'm a local solar installer focused on providing service to the Estero Bay communities and surrounding communities. Having seen that the residential markets had become somewhat marginalized due in part to large-scale commercial solar projects, I established this business in order to provide access to service for residential customers. My wife and I have been residents now here in Morro Bay for just over 11 years. Our children, we have twins, have now been residents for just over 9. They just had a birthday. A little on my resume, I'm a Cal Poly graduate. I've got just a little bit over 15 years of experience in construction and environmental and engineering consulting. All of which has had a strong focus on providing the best possible customer service and satisfaction to clients. Give you a few points about solar in general and my business in particular. First off, I know residents here are very aware that a few months out of the year we can get a pretty pesky marine layer out here. And let me reassure you that just as soon as you can get a sunburn in a cloudy condition, you can produce solar electricity even when it's overcast. So I just don't want that to be a deterrent for any residents here along the coast that may have an interest in solar energy. So please keep that in mind. Second is when it comes to the projects that I deliver, the standard solar equipment and components that I use come with a 25-year performance warranty. And that is not typical across industry. It's not unusual to find solar inverters that have up to a 10-year warranty, and then you pay additional costs for extending the life of that warranty. Not so with the equipment that I install. As well as the equipment I provide provides very robust monitoring technology. If you have, if your home has an internet broadband connection, such as cable or DSL, you can have access to see how your system's performing anywhere you have access to the internet. So on a trip or out to dinner with friends, you know, pull out your smartphone and show off the money you didn't spend on electricity today. I can go on and on about it, but I love solar. I love speaking with clients that have questions about it. I have been setting up a table at Farmers Market roughly on an every other Saturday schedule. My next appearance there will be on the 21st. I have a table right in front of Legends Bar, very, very lively corner, so come by and say hi. And you can also have access to see the project I've installed at eb-ss.com or call at 805-235-5521. Thank you again very much for your time, and have a good meeting.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for coming tonight and introducing your business, and we wish you lots of success. We are at the public comment period. If any of you would like to address council, this is the appropriate time. Step right up. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. Please conclude when the buzzer goes off. Please state your name for the record. Good evening, Barry.
Good evening. Barry Brannon, citizen of Morro Bay. The wastewater treatment plant project that we are in joint powers authority, JPA meeting, will not be this Thursday. So there hasn't been an update to the public for the status of what our lobbyist performance was. We're not going to have a report this Thursday, and I just wondered if this council can give any light as to what the current plan is. I understand the meeting is this first week of August with the Coastal Commission. So for myself and for the citizens at home, I would appreciate if you can give us some kind of an update, because we will not get one from the JPA. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Would like to go next? Don't be shy. There we go.
Hi, Council. Trina Doherty, resident of Morro Bay and vice president of Morro Bay Fourth. Thank you, Carla, for acknowledging our celebration. We happen to agree that it was a great event. On behalf of the board, we would like to give a huge round of thanks to everyone who attended Morro Bay Fourth's 4th of July celebration and made it a rousing success. From our major sponsors to all of the residents who put a check in with their water bill and coins in the donation cans, we really appreciate the incredible support that we've gotten. We also could not have a terrific show. Morro Bay Rocks the Fourth was also watched online from computers to phones by several hundred people in 12 states, from Florida to Hawaii. And finally, the whole day was topped off by a beautiful fireworks display that lasted a full 15 minutes or a little more. And it could be seen thanks to the weather that we ordered up, of course, from Los Osos to North Morro Bay. A quick story about just how great our city is and the people who we attract here. A wallet was found by a young boy and his mom, and through their perseverance, the owners were eventually located. It was found near the shell shop. The owners thought they'd lost it in Tidelands Park and were totally devastated. Not speaking much English, they were even more scared and frustrated. Finally, meeting up at the parking kiosk, their wallet was returned to them with the contents intact, over $900 in cash. So ask Bill Pierce when you see him about their emotional meeting. It really shows the kindness that we can all be proud of. Lastly, our 8-member board of directors did an incredible job this year, building on the efforts of the first 2 years of Morro Bay Fourth. We look forward to continuing this great event, invite you all to join us in planning for next year. We welcome additional board members along with your valuable input and participation. And thanks again, everybody.
Thanks, Trina. Who'd like to go next? Hello, Nancy.
Mayor Yates and Council, I'm Nancy Barta. I'm here to represent Morro Bay Public Art Foundation and give you an update on our bus stop remodel project at City Park. Our artists are Dana Kim Hickson, Michael Ackerman, Jean Miller, and Jeff O'Dell. And this is a picture showing the progress that we've made. Neil and I and Marilyn repainted the whole outside of the bus stop, and we repainted the inside. It doesn't show up the color, but it's two different colors. We wanted to lighten up the interior. It was a little dark and oppressive for people. We have worked on a large portion of the inside of the wall. We have saved a portion of it to be finished by Jeff O'Dell. He had a medical emergency, and it'll take him 6 more weeks to recover enough that he can add his beautiful art to that wall as well. So it's not, the walls are not totally complete, but he'll add his talent to that also. We are yet to finish. We will do a faux finish on the floor so it looks like a rug, and I've done a lot of research on, worked with Joe Woods on how to safely do that so it's durable and safe for the people who use the bus stop. We have the bench that shows there with the cardboard on it is coming out. We have one large piece that was done by Michael Ackerman and a temporary one that we're working on. We still have some fundraising to do for Michael to do a second piece. We are still fundraising, but we have had a great deal of support both from Morro Bay, from the County of San Luis, and a lot of other generous people, and we appreciate every bit of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for all your efforts on this. Who would like to go next?
Hello, my name is Paul Carroll. I'm actually from Mojave, California. Been coming over here for the last 30 years, and I'm representing Miss Priscilla Cole, the owner of the formerly known as the Roadway Inn, but now it's called the Morro Bay Sandpiper Inn. And her motel is just changing over from the Roadway Inn. Her rating right now is 4 stars out of 5, and this is on TripAdvisor and Yelp.com. Now, myself, I've been coming here, like I said, for about 30 years. In the last probably 4 years, I've been staying at the Roadway Inn. It's a very nice hotel, clean, nothing fancy, but the people there are very nice. And since Ms. Koh has taken over, it has improved quite a bit. Her phone number at her place is 805-772-7503. Her website is stayatmorrobaysandpiper.net. Like I said, I've got a few reviews here, but I think it might be better just me having been a person that I drive 3.5 hours to get here, and this is my favorite place to come in California. And like I said, the woman that runs the place is very, very good. The people she has working for her are very good. They're very polite and well-mannered, and out of all the places I've stayed in Morro Bay, to me, this is the best. And she is ranked here in Morro Bay number 15. So for a small place, it's
in Morro Bay and across the Central Coast, who believe that Cerrito Peak needs to be preserved and protected from what we see is an illegal development. And I'm going to show you a couple of images right now. If you could just enlarge, let's see a little bit more of the map. These are maps that are part of the public record, which I don't think a lot of the public has seen clearly. But I just want to show you some very basic things about why we believe this is an illegal development and should not have been permitted. So if you see that pink line, that's the property line of the private property owner. Everything inside of that pink line is his. If you look out, there's a green line, and that green line shows that between the
pink... Nicole, you need to speak into the microphone.
Sorry, please. Between the pink line and the green line is public property. That's public right-of-way. I want to call your attention to the yellow line. The yellow line is the fence line, and as you can see clearly, that fence line extends significantly into the public right-of-way, and at its furthest away point, it's actually 30 feet. From the property line. I tried an experiment and I walked out from my property line 30 feet across Cerrito Place. I was well across the street and into my neighbor's yard. That area closes in 1,200 square feet of public property for private use. For myself and for many others, this is a strong indication that this should have not have been permitted. It's giving public land away for private use only. Okay, if we can see the other map. This next image is the same map, but what I want you to focus on is the black line. The black line here is the driveway. We've heard a lot of talk about the driveway. The driveway is 400 feet long. That's the length of a football field. It is 20 feet wide at the minimum. And as you can see, it gets much wider than 20 feet, which is very confusing because I'm going to read something from the staff report, which says that the applicant has proposed to develop a 20-foot-wide accessway to approach the planned residence. No additional improvements on Alta Street or Jordan Terrace, which are the paper roads, the public right-of-way. So no additional improvements would be developed at this time. As you can see, there are significant improvements being made. This is a hammerhead turnaround that will be used solely for that private development. At its widest, that's about 2,000 square feet of pavement. That's a small parking lot. That is for the sole use of the private landowner to the detriment of the public. If anybody's interested in knowing more about these maps or in talking to me about them, I would be happy to go over in more detail. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nicole.
Good evening. I'm Cynthia Hawley, attorney for Save the Park and for the Xerxes Society. And I want to just clarify a couple things. First of all, I want to let the city know that the Save the Park and the Xerxes Society have responded to the city's settlement offer, and my clients are interested in it. They have some more questions, so that is still open as far as we're concerned. Also, I want to make sure that that everybody understands that the lawsuit does not try to stop all development in Morro Bay by any means. The second cause of action is against a continuing violation of the law by the city of Morro Bay by which it allows development without requiring the developer to identify the existence and location of sensitive resources on the site. And this is a violation that's ongoing, it's continuing, called a pattern and practice of abuse. And in order to deal with that violation, we have asked the court to postpone any further coastal development permits in order to provide time for the city to come up with a mechanism by which it will not engage in this violation anymore. So as soon as that occurs, coastal development permits can occur again. But we're not asking to, or trying to stop development in the city. We're trying to stop violations of the law by the city. Next, I want to make sure you understand that nobody is trying to steal Mr. Riddell's property, which he has mentioned several times. The reality is, as you've just seen, is that Mr. Riddell has taken private property. The city has given Mr. Riddell over 1,200 square feet of private public property that belongs to the public and is used not right now as public open space for development for his own exclusive use. Also, Mr. Riddell has known that the property on Cerrito Peak, that his site is subject to prescriptive rights, a public prescriptive rights easement. He's known this for years. The people have been using that site since the 1960s as a public park and a public area. And not only that, but the city even informed him of the prescriptive rights on the site. When Mr. Riddell sued the city in 2006 and tried to get half of Jordan Terrace, half of that area that you saw, that was Jordan Terrace on that map that circles around his property. In 2006, he tried to take that for his own. The court didn't allow it, but the city did, and the city gave him that 1,200 square feet, so it allowed it in part. But when the
plant, which is what, and the reason being, they can't conform to the new water standards, which we in Cape, for one, oppose the power plant on that basis. And so bottom line is that we were right and the city was really off base on this. So that's an I told you so. And the other thing I'm here for is the lease on A11. Page 3, section 5 is of real concern to me because during the CEC process, we talked about hidden pollution on that power plant site, and here it acknowledges that it may or may not be there. They don't have any real knowledge that it's there, but they kind of say that it might be. And then the second part of it is that, you know, this the leasers' facilities could, said facility may, from time to time, emit noise and byproducts from combustion, which may flow and pass over, under, and about the premises, and the leaser shall not be required to reduce or otherwise diminish the noise level or byproducts of combustion in any manner whatsoever. Now, I wonder if that precludes our ability to complain about the pollution from that power plant. Now, I'm of the mind that hopefully it won't continue to run, and in light of them terminating their permit, I would hope the city would finally say no more lease on the outfall. I mean, it's been proven that the outfall destroys our estuary. I don't know what else we can do to prove it, but, you know, we've gone along for 13 years, you know, examining the documents and listening to the people that really know what's going on. And it does hurt our estuary. It hurts our fishing industry. It has for years, just as we said back in 2000. So why we are pursuing all these leases and it trying to bend over backwards to get a little bit more money out of Dynegy. And another thing I want to say real quick is Dynegy's crying poor mouth. They're in bankruptcy because they're $5 billion in debt. Well, don't forget that they're $11 billion in the black. So, sure, they owe $5 billion, but they have $11 billion. So to tell our city that they can't afford the $750,000 to keep that outfall lease is just absurd. And we'll never be stronger than right now to make them pay
that.
Thank you.
Who would like to go next? Anybody else? Nope. There's John. Hi, John.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay, and I want to speak to you briefly on item, I think it's D1, the fees. I took a look at the fees, and I got to tell you, it's kind of hard to understand, and so I think it's easy for people to be confused about what people may be paying to build here. I'm only going to focus my comments on single-family residences. For starters, the building permit costs 2.5% of the total valuation, and then 0.3% for plan review on top of that, and then a 6% surcharge on top of that for general plan maintenance fee. So that adds up to, you know, roughly 3% of the total valuation. So I'm thinking to myself, what does it cost, you know, to build, say somebody wants to spend $200,000, which is not an unreasonable amount to spend to build a house. It's very low, in fact. So they would be looking at, you know, thousands of dollars there in those fees. It's easy to say a tenth of a percent here or a half a percent there. But wait, there's more. There's building impact fees. For single building fees per single family residence, $3.90 a square foot, park fees of $1.20 a square foot, and various other impact fees, police, parks, dams, storm drain, blah, 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 all adds up to $12.63 per square foot. So if somebody's going to build what would be today a decent size but not overly sized home of 2,000 square feet, we're looking at $26,000 worth of impact fees. But wait, there's more. There's a water meter fee of $2,433, a wastewater fee of $4,400. These are for the smallest sizes listed. So what are we up to now? You know, I don't know how they do the valuations, but what I'm trying to say is it's a lot. Okay, it's a whole lot of money, and it's kind of obfuscated. I don't think it's intentional. I just think it's the way the thing kind of evolves over time. It would be really nice for people to know what does it really cost to build a house without considering the construction costs, just the plans, all the stuff that they have to pay to the city or through the city for things like engineering review, plan check review, water, sewer, streets, and all that stuff. I think that would be a really nice number to know, and I've never, ever gotten a clear picture of what that is. I know it's a lot, and that some of it requires things to be done.
The impact fees and all that is there for you, because it's important to keep our city running. I also wanted to make a comment about C3, and this is where you're talking about going to some form of iPad or instead of using paper products, and I get that. It's a real conservation thing. I do have concerns about the training of that and the using of that and the abuse of that, and so if you do go that direction, I hope that there is some kind of document you write with that about how that's going to be used and not abused, because I think that's real important, not only for your protection and for these people's protection up here as well. Because it is it's only $10,000, but you know that's $1,000, almost $900, $800 per pop. So if you're buying 12 of them. And then my last statement is really just a question. I have heard from a couple of different people that the city now has an unmarked police car. And I'd like to know if that's true, and if it's true, why.
Thank you, Betty. Anybody else? Gary?
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, Worker Bees of Morro Bay. Hope everybody had a good 4th. We did. Just had a couple of positive things about our present City Council I like to bring up, because the newspapers will never print it. They only want to print the other side. And the last 2 years, I think, are very, very important, and I don't know if the TV land out there knows this or not, but I don't mean not excluding you, but we got 4 well-experienced business people up there that's probably way over 100 years of business experience. And the reason why I say that is in order to balance the budget, we had to work with the city employees, we had to work with the chief of police unions, the police unions and the fire chief unions, we had to work for the whole enchilada. Now some states are having a horrible time trying to work with the unions, and also on the Central Coast here, we still have a problem. Some cities are deep in debt. This city is positive. They're able to work out a two-tier system and so forth, And that took a lot of negotiating to do that. Now, some people can't negotiate. Some people say, this is it, and that's going to be it. I've been listening to these people for years coming up here. This is it. We're not going to take anything else. You got to compromise. That's what Benjamin Franklin said. If you can't compromise with our republic, then we might as well shut the doors and leave. Okay, the city council not only balanced the budget, the city council also was able to get over $1 million to repair our roads. Now, it's going to happen. It's going to probably take a month or two. There's some problems with the company that they got. And so those are two big positive things in this Morro Bay, being able to work together to compromise. And Noah was part of that. I know you have a business background, but I'm just, pointing out. Okay, anyway, something that really bothers me, too, the city council, they want to move the sewer. Okay, they want to move the sewer. But what I want to know is what happened in Los Osos all these years. Their sewer bills are going to be over, from what I heard, over $140 a month plus. You hear that, TV Land? Now, I heard it cost to move just the clean water to the high school is going to be $3 to $4 million. Now, I could be wrong. I'm going to really look into this now because I got an engineering background, and I'm going to find out what the cost is. I heard one side of the story. Now I'm going to get the other side. And my son is a superintendent in heavy construction. I'm going to talk to him, too, about construction cost and all this, because we got to let the folks know. If we're going to have $200 a month sewer, we're going to have $200 a month sewer bills. If we're going to have $50 a month, we'll have $50. Tell the folks the truth. What is it going to cost to put this sewer system away? And one last comment. Nancy Johnson, or Councilman Johnson, happy anniversary. This is her anniversary tonight, and she's dedicated this to her being here for 47 years.
Thank you, Gary. Okay. Anybody else? Anyone? Hi.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. Priscilla Cole from the new Morro Bay Sandpiper Inn, formerly known as the Roadway Inn. Our new website is called morrobaysandpiper.net. And we're offering a special local discount of 20%, because I need your help.
Although, if it's not there now, it will be first thing in the morning. In addition to that, we recently heard from Coastal Commission staff that they've made a preliminary recommendation for not approving the existing site location, and we're waiting till next Friday for their staff report to come out to understand the details of that preliminary recommendation.
Great. Thank you. Anybody follow up here? Over here.
Yeah, actually, I did want to give the chief of police a chance to comment on the unmarked car. I've had some correspondence with him about that as well. I think he has a little more detail that would be helpful.
As the council may be aware, that we have four black and white, quote unquote, patrol cars. We've recently added last year two Chevy Tahoes. One is the watch commander's, the other is the canine vehicle. And then we have two other predominantly white vehicles that our volunteers and policing drive. As the mayor mentioned, we have a number of plain looking Toyota Camrys. In which I drive one of them, the commander has one of those, and then the other one is used by a detective. In addition, we have two Ford Escapes, I think that is the model, that are just standard off the dealer lot, if you will. All of those vehicles are emergency equipped with the lights on the inside and the sirens, because if a major incident took place, obviously, we could put them into work and for the benefit of the citizens and directing traffic, et cetera. Also, if a big incident takes place, myself, if you want to use me as an example, could respond code 3 to an incident taking place and assist one of our officers. So, yes, she's correct. We do have a number, as you're aware, of plain, as we call them, type vehicles that are in the city. We don't use them on routine patrol or for traffic enforcement. I would underscore that. Our black and whites, our patrol vehicles, are the ones that do that. However, again, using myself as an example, if I'm driving around the city and I see someone drive through a stop sign or something like that, it's my option to take action and stop the person and issue a warning, if you will. So the option is there, but again, they're not used routinely for that purpose, so we're not being sneaky in doing that type thing. If that adds to it, Councilman.
Are you good? You know, we've seems absolutely appropriate to me that the police department would have unmarked cars. Anything else on this side?
Go ahead. Yeah, I just want to, I guess, not trying to beat the dead horse, but the city attorney at the last meeting talked about the Save the Parks lawsuit and the CDPs on that, on the coastal development permits, and then this evening it was commented that the intention is to not stop building, but I guess I'm just looking from the city attorney for clarification again, is that, based on what he said at the last meeting, that is exactly what that does.
Do we have to beat a dead horse? I'll say this because I don't have the lawsuit right in front of me. Anybody who wants to contact me in the public can look at the lawsuit, look at what they're alleging, and look at exactly what the judge they're asking the judge to do. And the language says that they are asking the judge to postpone coastal development permits if they prevail in their allegations. So.
And Cynthia said that. I mean, I heard her say that. It's not their intent to stop building, but that if they were successful in this, coastal development permits would not be issued. If coastal development permits are not issued, building stops. So,
can I follow up with further information from the city attorney regarding what is the lawsuit asking the city to develop?
I have no idea what they're asking to develop. I have no idea what projects they say that have been done improperly processed by the city. Yeah, they're just allegations at this point. They're not even through the pleading stage. So it's litigation, and this is not the proper form to discuss it. But their allegations are such in a preliminary stage that I have no idea what projects they're even talking about that were performed improperly by the city.
But we're you just talked about the suspension of all CDPs.
I'm wondering what
the lawsuit says would be the trigger to allow the reauthorization of CDPs.
I have no idea. Some type of plan, training, I have no idea. I have no idea what their allegations are asking for other than the language states they're asking for postponement of coastal development permits until the city complied with their coastal development plan. How it's not being complied with, I have no idea. Which projects we didn't comply with, I have no idea. Those are issues.
Could I hear a motion, please, approving items A1, A2, A4, A5, A6, A7, A8, A10?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. A3, Nancy.
Nice to hear. A3 is the authorization to fill the recently vacated assistant planner position and talks about recommending that we hire an assistant planner and goes into some of the other costs. What I'm wondering, Mr. Livick, I guess is the one to ask first, is, and I'm not sure how to term this, but what would the difference in salary cost be between hiring an assistant planner to hiring an experienced, fully qualified planner?
If you could give me just a second, I could probably look that up since I have the technology right here. Andrea. Well,
I would say an associate level planner versus an assistant planner.
Okay, associate. Thank you for the terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Boucher. This is effective, these are rates effective July 2011 to July 2012. I won't remind you about anything. Approximately $47,000 to $57,000 for an assistant planner, approximately $54,000 to $66,000 for an associate planner.
Okay, thank you very much. So actually the starting rate for an associate planner would be even below the top rate for an assistant. What are the job requirements and experience for an associate planner, and what's expected of an associate planner versus an assistant planner?
I don't have the job descriptions with me, but in general, an assistant planner is somebody with fairly limited experience. On our job description, I think we look for 1 year experience or an advanced degree, a master's degree in urban planning. An associate planner would have more years of experience, probably several years of experience in urban planning, coastal projects, and then ideally they would have their AICP certification also.
Thank you. Just based on what I understand in terms of the backlog we've had and the work that needs to get done in there, and here in your staff report you talk about the amount of work we need to get done to keep moving, I would really like to recommend that we look at hiring a more experienced associate planner rather than dealing with an assistant planner. And I don't know what's next based on that recommendation.
Can you respond to that, Ron?
You know, one way to recruit for this position would be to recruit it for both an associate and assistant level planner and see what kind of applications that we get and hire at the best person that we get for the job based on their experience level.
That sounds like a really good solution, or at least a good plan.
Can I comment? I would like to, the experience level is important, but also balancing the financial component, the cost of that position as well. How would you be able to do that? Because I would anticipate currently the market is strong for us to find a very nice range of candidates applying for either position.
I believe that you're correct in that there is there's more supply than demand for planners at the present time. So we can rely on the market availability of planners.
Just to follow up then, speaking to the financial side, the cost side, this is an interesting idea. How would you balance that? Would the council be involved at all in that decision point? I would
get a position, and then we'll bring that back to at mid-year if there needs to be a budget adjustment based on what we get. Certainly keep you posted as to how that application process is going.
Well, I'm going to suggest we'll go a little beyond that you make the motion to approve A3, but to include assistant or associate planner, whichever best suits the department and depending on the applicants.
So moved. Did we get that?
Did that make any sense, Jamie?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. A9, Carla.
I'm pulling that just to ask Mr. Ensby to give a brief update. This was funded last year in our budget cycle, and so I just want the community to know where we're at as far as the North T-Pier repairs.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council.
As in your report, yes, we did fund that project last year to the tune of about $450,000. There were funds remaining in that account. This has been an ongoing project for a number of years. Currently, it's funded at approximately $717,000. In 2010, we did a dive inspection. We do those approximately every 5 years. It revealed some fairly substantial piling issues. At that point, we cut off the south leg of the pier to vehicle traffic, pending a more thorough inspection and a more robust plan to rebuild the pier. In 2011, we hired Shoreline Engineering and Halcro Diving to go and do a very thorough investigation underwater of the pier, including coring samples and a much more thorough investigation of the piling. That took place almost exactly a year ago. It was just after July 4th last year. Took them several months to put that package together in their report. Since then, we've had Shoreline Engineering working on technical specifications based on their engineering findings in the dive inspection and structural inspection. We're about at the end of the process to get our final technical specifications out of Shoreline, working in conjunction with Marwell Construction to begin mapping out a timeline and overall construction program to begin the repairs of that pier. Concurrently, I'm working with coastal staff right now, scoping out what our proposal is and getting their initial input to begin the process for the coastal development permit application. I would anticipate a waiver, knock on wood. Last time we did such a project, we had it permitted in a much lesser scope. In approximately 2004, that permit has expired, but at that time it was a waiver provided we complied with conditions, primarily having to do with what type of piles and how to install them. At this point, I'm anticipating getting to Coastal sometime the end of this summer and getting a bid submission and sometime in early fall and beginning construction in early fall.
Move approval of A9.
Second. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. George, we have to ask you to... Oh, I'm sorry.
A11 is the license agreement for Dynegy Properties use for the city. And I just wanted to ask Mr. Schultz a question about with this agreement, we would then be able to utilize the properties as noted here, which include the triangle-shaped property at the end of Front Street. When would you anticipate us be able to begin use?
As soon as we can get an executed copy back from Dynegy, call them tomorrow and find out, but they say it's en route. So as soon as we get that back, then we can start using it.
Okay. And would that, during the periods where it's available, would the Triangle property be open at nighttime as well? Just curious.
There are no parameters as to time in the agreement, so I didn't even really think of that. We'll have to talk to Dynegy. There's still security issues, so we'll talk to police and see what they think.
Okay. And I've been approached by some of the business owners in the area, and they were wondering why all weekends weren't included during the off season. This is definitely focused between Memorial Day and Labor Day with some of our key holidays, which is excellent. It's a great improvement. But did you feel that Dynegy just wasn't willing to go that far?
I pushed it as far as I could. Our goal was to have it open all year round, and I think we can still get there. In fact, we're in negotiations to own that property. But for the time being and wanting to get this done and with just the issues at Dynegy, I felt I didn't want to push it any farther with the weekends. I certainly think, though, once we have this signed and if everything works well, that could be a simple amendment. I think this was our first step. Let's get it. We finally got the use of it.
Approval of A11.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. George.
You want to say why you're leaving?
George.
I leave so much I forgot. I'm leaving because my business is located pretty close to this, within the 500 feet limit, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's it.
Thank you, George. We won't talk too much while you're gone. Behind your back. Can I hear a motion approving item A12?
So moved.
Discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 4-0. Okay, George. Okay, we'll take a break and we'll come back from public hearings. You ready, Rob?
Yes, sir.
B1, Mr. Livick.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor, City Council. We're here to revise, repeal, amend, and reenact Chapter 14.72, which is the city's flood damage prevention regulations. This revision came about from correspondence with FEMA. They reviewed our existing ordinance, and it wasn't up to the current federal regulations. In addition to that, we needed to revise our flood ordinance to adopt the new flood maps that were amended in 2008. By making this change, it will continue to allow those residents that own property in flood-prone areas to continue to participate, and new residents that buy into flood-prone areas to participate in the flood insurance program, the National Flood Insurance Program. In addition to the changes required by FEMA, we have an amendment for consistency with our local coastal plan, changing the freeboard requirement or the finished floor elevation that you need to construct your home from 1 foot above the water flood elevation to 2 foot above that flood elevation. Upon adoption of this ordinance, staff will be looking at participating in the community rating system, which we already participate in for our fire insurance, for a reduction in fire insurance rates. And the CRS has a program for flood insurance also that would allow further discounts in flood insurance. That concludes my staff report, and recommend that the City Council open a public hearing, and I'm here to answer questions.
That was an excellent report. Questions for Rob?
Yeah, I would like to ask if you see any impacts from this with the wastewater treatment plant proposed project.
The project that we were proposing was proposing to elevate 2 feet above the water surface elevation, the 100-year water surface elevation, so it would have no effect on the proposed project, as the city proposed it anyway.
Okay, thanks for that update.
This is a public hearing. If any of you would like to address us on this, this is the time. Step right up. Hi, Betty. Come on up.
My name is Betty Windholtz, and I do have a couple of questions. It's a very significant, I think, change in the ordinance. Even though it's necessary, it will impact a lot of people. I'm thinking primarily of the Embarcadero and our lease sites down there, and I didn't know if Mr. Livett could comment on that. Also, just the reference that was made to the wastewater treatment plant on the current site, it seems to me I read that in there that said you cannot do it on fill, but that you can do variances, so I'm not sure how that works. So is this really just about private people's property, or does it include public projects as well? And if people are like renters and not homeowners, how would they get to see a map of where the floodplains are in Morro Bay? Those are my three questions.
Anyone else? Anybody? Okay, I'll bring it back to council. There were three questions posed by Betty. Rob, I wrote them down if you didn't get them.
It affects both public and private property.
Livick's comments regarding the fill, and one of those conditions is that the fill doesn't displace those floodwaters and therefore impact surrounding properties. That was one of the findings that would need to be made, and that's an important distinction.
Okay, you good? Can I hear a motion for item B1?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Who's going to read the title and number? Andrea?
That's strictly my job.
I'm sorry. Sorry for asking.
It's ordinance number 579, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, California, repealing, amending, and reenacting Chapter 14.72 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code, per in flood damage prevention.
Thank you. You did it so well. Okay, B2, Kathleen.
Yes, sir. Good evening. Before you tonight is an appeal of conditional use permit UP0-348 and coastal development permit CP0-372 for the construction of a new single-family residence at 281 Main Street. Just give you a brief summary of this. At their May 16, 2012 meeting, the Planning Commission granted a conditional use permit and coastal development permit for the construction of a 2,829-square-foot single-family residence with an approximate 700-square-foot garage. The applicant was required to apply for conditional use permit because this is within the PD zone district and required a precise plan. The proposed residence is also located on the west side of Main Street, which is within the appeals jurisdiction for coastal development permit and therefore requires a regular coastal development permit. An appeal was filed on this approval by the Planning Commission May 25th by Betty Winholtz. And Ms. Winholtz's appeal requests that the City Council return the project to the Planning Commission with the direction that the applicant submit with the standard detail required documents, submit other materials that are appropriate for a PD analysis, and have the Planning Commission reevaluate for consistency with the LCP and the PD and other zoning requirements. And the project is to abide by the codified tree requirements. With that, I have in the staff report for your information an analysis of all of the points actually articulated in the appellant's argument and the staff's response to that. And I'm not going to belabor the point and read those into the record. And I would like also to point out that we have received two additional letters on this appeal, which are in support of the appeal. And with that, we'd just like to say that staff analyzed the appeal, and we think we've provided sufficient documentation here. And our conclusion is that we do feel that the project is consistent with the general plan, local coastal plan, and the municipal code, and that we recommend the City Council deny the appeal and uphold the Planning Commission's motion to issue conditional use permit UP0-348 and coastal development permit CP0-372. For a single-family residence at 281 Main Street. And with that, I conclude and I'll open to any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Kathleen before we begin? Betty, you get go first. I've communicated with Betty and with the builder's representative, Kathy Novak, and 10 minutes apiece, and you may start.
Thank you. My name is Betty Winholtz, and I am the appellant, and I have some visuals for you of our area. Most of you probably are aware of this area. You have to pretty much go on Main Street to get down to the Morro Bay State Park. It's an old neighborhood. It has old trees in it. This is Fig Street. This is, would be your going south on Main. You've just left Olive Street and the Colmer development on your right. If it were not a foggy day, you would be seeing the sand spit in the ocean out there. And that's the point of the pictures, and I'm sorry that it was foggy today. We're continuing on south, and you can see here again, this is the next house. The first house, I don't know if you noticed, it was actually, there's a two-story house in the background. There's a single story there. Here's another single story up near the pathway. The point being that as you get closer to the public right-of-way, the houses have been traditionally single-story, not two-story, and built around the trees. Again, in the background, there's a house that you cannot see very well, but it's there, and in the background is the sand spit. And you can just keep going, Bob, if you would. Now we're coming, this is the property just to the north of the property at hand. Again, there's your better view of the sand spit and the bay. This is now looking onto the property that's getting ready to be developed, and this is where the house would be. This is from the south looking north, the other direction, again, where the property would be. They've already got this easement where the property, where the people will drive into their home. Everyone has seen this thing that we would love to get screened. Again, here is a two-story house down the hill. This is one of the pieces of property, the garage, as you just have seen in our pictures. And then the other one that's related to that is, what is it that you're seeing when you look out? And one of the items that's designated on our map is the sand spit. And that's the key that you see there as the scenic item. Thank you, Bob. So basically, my contention is that the PD overlay, the plan development overlay, was not sufficiently evaluated for two reasons. One, the applicant did not submit all the required materials that should be and shall be submitted for this. And on your third page in, it lists, or let me say fourth page in, that I have identified for you all the different items that should be involved in a precise plan, and all of those were not submitted to the Planning Commission. And yes, two items had been submitted since then in preparation for this appeal, but again, that wasn't to the benefit of the Planning Commission when they made their decision. And I would contend that some of those plans that have been submitted, particularly the landscape plan, is not to the detail and with all the criteria that, again, the LORs require of it. So plans have been submitted but not completed. I think the other part of this is that we have for a long time been protective of this area because of its scenic, and there's been controversy because some of it's been about fishing and commercial and some of it's been about residential, but there's been this real nice balance that has been held for several decades. This house is a game changer for us. This house is 60 plus feet long, very close to the walkway. It will rise, I believe, anywhere from 15 to 19 feet above the sidewalk, so it will create this mass wall. This wall is the back of the house, even though they're calling it the front yard, and there is no entrance there. There are a few little tiny windows, as you'll see in your plans. And so it becomes very much not compatible with our neighborhood, not compatible with the normal use of that area. It's normal use because it's residential, but certainly not in keeping with the character of that area that we've tried to preserve. We're very grateful that the trees are being spared, at least for now, and we hope that they won't come back and ask for them to be cut down later. I've listed for you, the City Council, a number of things after the front page where my responses to the staff's questioning of my grounds for the appeal. And I've, by doing that, the first one was inconsistencies with the LCP and the general plan, and I've given you a good seven pages of those that I think have shall in them. And as you know, shall is not negotiable. Those are things that you have to do. The analysis of the PD I already spoke to. Specific zoning code, things that were not enforced, like neighborhood compatibility, the landscaping, the drainage, the engineering, these things. Simulations, when you're in a PD zone, we have said that we want to have either a 3D model or a visual simulation of some kind so we can see the impact to the neighborhood, or story poles. None of those things happened in this case. And again, the violation of the tree requirement, fortunately, has been withdrawn. We appreciate that, but I would love to see that as if you choose to rule on this rather than send it back to the Planning Commission. I'm hoping that you would make that a condition for the project. One of my concerns when I spoke at the Planning Commission meeting about this was the grading, because I've lived in that neighborhood now for 14 years, and I knew the previous owner and the way he treated his property, and there was never grading, and grading had occurred on there before his application for this. And when I acquired of staff, yes, indeed, he got a grading permit as part of putting in the easement or the access road that will go for four properties that are down there, one of which has already been developed. Well, there was a house, and then he did an addition. There's still another house yet to be proposed, again, which will be right against the street, which raises a concern for us. Again, here, another house creating that scenic blockage. Our visual resources need to be protected. The other resource that I feel needs to be protected is the archaeological, and because, as you know, we're at the foot of Cerrito Peak, and staff believes that because of they have those maps and we, of course, as the public, don't get to see where those protected resources are, that the neighbor to the west of me in the last year or so was told that that they had or were near property view of the sand spit in the bay, and that this will immediately disrupt that. And so that's of great concern to the neighbors. So I would, the other thing that I think was not touched upon and I would say vocally to you but is also in your notes is that this has never been evaluated in terms of the bluff and where that is in terms of that, because this is within the bluff zone.
Thank you, Betty. Hi, Kathy.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here tonight representing the applicant for the single-family home at 281 Main Street. Before I begin, I'd like to thank staff for their time and efforts on this project and recommendation to deny the appeal and uphold the Planning Commission's decision. Pursuant to government code, appeals are limited only to the issues that were raised at the Planning Commission public hearing. Therefore, I will focus my presentation on the comments provided by the appellant to the Planning Commission. The appellant raised six main issues mixed with several subtopics. However, in the interest of time and the details provided in your staff report, I will address four main topics, which are the precise plan, the trees, the building height, and the CUP findings. First, as noted in your staff report, there are several items that the project plan should contain for a precise plan. In reviewing these requirements, the project as presented, coupled with approvals from a prior permit, did in fact provide all the details required under the precise plan, with a potential minor difference in the landscape plan. The appellant argues that there was not a total development plan, an engineering plan, parcel map, correct architectural elevation labeling, lighting, and landscaping plans. I have several specific points to address these items the appellant has raised. Number one, the total development plan, precise dimensions, location, structures, yards, pathways, and open space are the elements reflected in these plans, and those have been met. The engineering plan was previously submitted with an approved driveway construction. Number three, there is no subdivision proposed, therefore no tract or parcel map is required. Four, the architectural elevations were included in the plan set, however, there was an oversight in labeling the house orientation. This simple mistake should not invalidate the plans because the direction of the and location of the home can be clearly determined from the site and floor plans. Number five, as for the lighting, the plans describe and show the detail of the lighting fixtures that will be used. The lighting plan includes the location of the exterior lights, such as the Malibu yard lights in the front and three locations in the back, the front entry stair lighting, three deck locations, and a front porch light. These specifications for each of these lights are provided in the plans, which indicates that the bulbs will be between 35 and 100 watts or 18-watt fluorescence. Furthermore, each lighting fixture has a diffuser or a frosted shade. Staff notes in your report that the details on the lighting was missing. However, I must respectfully disagree. There was detailed information provided at the Planning Commission, and they found it was sufficient to address and conclude that there would not be any excessive lighting and that this will not infringe on the neighboring properties. Additionally, the appellant claims that a photometric plan should be provided to review for another precise plan. The zoning ordinance is clear that, quote, miscellaneous plans, end quote, such as lighting is only required if appropriate to evaluate the specific proposal. Again, there has been sufficient information provided to evaluate this project, especially since it's a single-family home and not a commercial building. Number six, as I mentioned earlier, the landscaping plan is potentially the only item that may not have been fully addressed for the precise plan. I say this with some reservation since the landscaping plan submitted and reviewed by the Planning Commission. This plan identified zones at the home site and indicated the selection of native and drought-tolerant plant materials that would be used. As staff has noted, a revised landscaping plan was submitted after the Planning Commission hearing. The only additional information provided on the second plan was the inclusion of specific plant materials from the original list, the size of the materials to be planted, and several of those which have already been planted, a drip and microspray irrigation, and other minor notes such as wood chips and installing a bird bath. I believe that the landscaping plan presented provided enough detail to address any issues that would have surfaced during the public hearing, and the Commission approved the project with specific condition to provide a fully developed landscape plan to staff for review and consistency with the city codes. Number 7, and lastly on this topic, staff notes in your report that no visual simulations were provided. I mention this because, as I described in the lighting section, this is a miscellaneous plan and is only required when the degree of the project warrants this type of additional information, such as a commercial project. The next topic I'd like to address is the trees. The project is originally submitted, proposed the removal of 2 eucalyptus trees on the north and west side of the home. It came to light during the staff's review of the project that the previous condition was placed on this property that no trees shall be removed unless a hazardous condition exists. Therefore, staff included a condition which was approved by the commission that the trees would only be removed if the certified height of the house will be 15.5 feet above the sidewalk elevation. Due to the sloping topography, this house will appear as the same height as a one-story house with a peaked roof and a raised foundation from the Main Street side. Also, to put this into perspective, a single-story building along the west side of the Embarcadero are 17 feet high with a pitched roof. Second, the house is set back 20 feet from the property line. There is also a 9-foot right-of-way strip between the sidewalk and the property line, so the house will have an effective setback of 29 feet from the sidewalk. Third, there is no retaining wall mentioned, as mentioned by the appellant. Fourth, the house is set at a slight angle and articulated with a portion of the building recessed back 7 feet towards the south and the west away from Main Street. This combined with a peaked roof that I mentioned provides architectural interest and not a solid mass. Fifth, there will be screening from Main Street between the existing large shrubs and trees and the proposed large vegetation as per the landscape plan. I would hope that the appellant would be happy to see this additional landscaping since she commented that it provides continuity with the streetscape and the privacy for neighbors. Lastly on this topic, I would like to mention that because of traditional setbacks and additional setbacks from the driveway, there will be side and rear yard setbacks that will range between 5 feet and 40 feet from the property lines. My last topic for this evening is on the CUP findings. The appellant is objecting to the finding that states that the establishment, maintenance, or operation of the use, in this case a single-family home, will be not detrimental to health, safety, morals, comfort, and general welfare of persons residing or working in the neighborhood. The appellant states that this house will be detrimental to the character of the neighborhood because of the height, the length, and the location. I must strongly disagree with this statement since the house will appear as a one-story house from Main Street, be screened by large vegetation. It meets all the standards for the height, the setbacks, and the lot coverage, and there are no exceptions or variants being requested. In closing, I would like to respectfully clarify one comment in your staff report on page 5, which indicates that there were many items that have not been addressed, although that they have been addressed, although that they were not addressed at the public hearing. From the applicant's point of view, there have been only 2 items brought forward since the Planning Commission meeting. The first is the voluntary withdrawal of the tree removal, and the second, it was the updated landscape plan. Beyond that, there were not any other issues that have just now been addressed. Last of all, I would say that the applicants have a vested interest in this house to make sure that the landscaping is done tastefully, that there are no drainage or erosion control issues, no excessive lighting, or any other problems simply because they live across the driveway and they are the neighbors. On behalf of the applicant, I will ask the City Council to deny the appeal and uphold the Planning Commission's approval of the coastal development permit and conditional use permit as presented. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Kathy or Betty before I open it up? This is a public hearing. If any of you would like to address us on this. Good evening, Dorothy.
My name is Dorothy Cutter, and I would say that there are 2 major problems with this property. One is that the developer or the property owner owns all the adjoining properties, and it's all in one ownership, and it's all going to be developed. And therefore, according to our general plan, he's supposed to have presented a total plan for this property before he even started. So the city has sort of started a piecemeal permissions. He's already gotten one piece of property. The property is sort of a mess now. And so this addition is going to be a solid wall with a back to Main Street. Now, there's already a precedent in the city for not doing that. You didn't allow Colmer to do that on Main Street. That was one block away. You made him, he had to front his houses on Main Street. And this house is going to, you're going to see the back. It's like he's going to give you the finger. And anyhow, I think it's very inappropriate. Also, there's no adequate lighting plan. This is a PD zone. And then there's the issue of the archaeological significant artifacts. The staff report says that there are none, but does not say how they arrived at that. Clearly, this property is within 300 feet of archaeological site, and CEQA requires that you spell it out. Anyhow, so that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy. Anyone else? Anybody? Okay, I'll bring it back to council. Thank you, Dorothy. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Betty. Questions? Start with you, Noah.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I had some time today to look over this and to visit the site. I didn't meet with the applicant, but I did look over it and think about it in context as well as talk to our planning staff. And at this point, I find myself also, as many of the neighbors have mentioned in communications to me, still wondering what the project looks like. So what is proposed, we're setting the applicant up, and this, you know, really isn't a concern of ours, but we're setting the applicant up to end up at the Coastal Commission with a further appeal. And I wonder if we ask for some more information and data and have this come back, we could help avoid that situation and hopefully get to a place where the neighborhood understands the vision that the property owner has and feels confident that their concerns have been addressed. And I would suggest, too, that the lighting, the information that's been presented is not strong enough to be able to say whether or not there will be impacts. And from looking at the fixtures that have been presented here, those certainly aren't the variety that direct light down. They broadcast light out, and yes, they would be shaded, but I'm familiar with a number of those. And what you see at nighttime is still direct light. It's not blocked or shaded and directed to where it would be needed, which is down and to the walkways and so on. So I have concerns about this. It's not necessarily about the project itself, but about how the information has been presented or not been presented.
George? Andrew? Carla? I'm sorry. You move fast enough.
I'm sorry, I'm not fast enough tonight. I remember seeing the beginning of this project several years ago on Planning Commission and having a lot of questions then. I think, for me, those questions have been answered. This looks like a very thorough and complete plan. I like the elevation drawings, and I would vote to proceed with this.
Thank you, sorry. Yeah, I watched this vet its way through the Planning Commission a couple years ago, when they were splitting the lots out, and so I'm not really sure why one of the speakers public comment commented that it, or maybe it was the appellant, that it should be submitted as one plan. It's already vetted through the process. It's already been allowed to be split up and divided, so I see them as individual projects, regardless of who owns the property. They're still each one individual, and I don't have a problem with the way this is presented. As far as that, I understand what you're saying about the information. I don't think that's our job to make sure everybody went to seek out the information. And I have no doubt, unfortunately, that that regardless of whether we approve this or not, the appellant will appeal it to the Coastal Commission. So I personally don't see a reason to delay our end of it and supporting approval, because that's my guess of what's going to happen anyway.
And I'm supportive of the project. I've been through all your points, and frankly, I can't find merit in them, especially the archaeological one. With, I was told by a neighbor who was told that at one point that there was 300 feet away. It's just like, that's not evidence to me. I disagree with you in the lighting. I mean, Malibu lights, I mean, it's a house. It's not going to be, you know, it just, I have Malibu lights in my house. They don't, they're not offending anybody. Architecturally, it's a house. It's a fine-looking house. It's almost 30 feet back from the sidewalk. So I'm going to vote to deny the appeal. And like Carla said, it's not our responsibility to make things so. I mean, we're all expecting you to go ahead and appeal to the Coastal Commission, and that's your right. And so I'm ready to vote to deny the appeal. Any more discussion? I'll make the motion if you want.
One quick discussion point. Would you be willing to add the condition? The applicant has said that they will retain the two trees. Would you be willing to include a condition, as was originally included, to save those trees as long as they're healthy and not causing a risk to life and property?
You know, I would not be willing, because we allow people, property owners, to take down two trees on their property per year. They're eucalyptus trees. So no, I wouldn't, but that could be overruled. Well, I don't see support for that.
Okay, and then just to follow up briefly on my other comments, was because of the location and the obvious scenic value for this neighborhood, and what I would consider the likely requirements on other projects for this area because of the scenic value, I think we're offering an opportunity to develop without.
Again, good evening, Mayor and Council. This evening, we're requesting that you approve the Harbor Department budget as presented. This budget has been delayed in approval due to news concerning the Dynegy plan and how how the funding that Morro Bay receives will be affected. Understanding the potential plant closure in 2015, the city has been working over the past 3 years to remove the Dynegy money that has been used to balance the city's general fund and the city's harbor fund operating budgets for a number of those years. Those amounts include $500,000 to the general fund and $250,000 to the harbor fund. As stated, this plan for reduction has been in place for 3 years, and the city has successfully weaned the dependency from $500,000 to $200,000 in the general fund in operating budget, and $250,000 to $100,000 in the harbor fund operating budget. Based on the funding loss, there have been a number of other questions regarding the city's financial condition, and I think it's important to note that in recent years, the city has not used any reserves for its operating budget. The city's general fund reserve amounts also meet the council's mandated 27.5% of the operating budget. As you well know, the city has in place for all employee groups a pension reform plan that includes a second tier for all employees, and both new and current employees pay their portion of PERS. Morro Bay has very little debt, and the revenues are on the upswing. In a nutshell, Morro Bay is recovering. The Harbor Department annually generates $1.4 million of revenue from the lease site slips and moorings. This could be viewed as a significantly sized business in the city of Morro Bay. Since the last city council meeting, the city has had further news from Dynegy officials indicating that we can expect to receive a large percentage, if not the entire payment of $250,000 for the Harbor Fund in January 2013. With that news, we present to you a balanced harbor budget, which uses approximately $100,000 of the expected Dynegy funds and uses no harbor reserve funds. The staff report specifies the changes that have been made from the last city council meeting, and I'll briefly review those. They include lease site revenues increased to include annual CPI, as well as revised percentage gross figure, an additional $15,000 to reflect the coin-operated water
and a corresponding reduction of $8,000 in expenses. We've also decreased personnel expenses, which include three areas: the downgrading from the harbor business manager position to a harbor business coordinator, the reduction of costs due to the elimination of EPMC, which you might recall is employer-paid member contributions that you did at your last meeting, and a number of other expenses from various savings due to personnel issues. This budget also entertains transfer of approximately $147,000 to the Harbor Reserve, which then puts the Harbor Reserve account at 30% of the Harbor operating budget. And that number is based on receiving the total $250,000 from Dynegy in 2013. Just to recap, this proposed budget includes one Harbor Director, one Harbor Business Coordinator, one and three quarters off OA4s, Office Assistant 4s, and four Harbor Patrol officers. My apologies for not including the salaries for the employees that we're talking about. I think we included that in the original staff report. But just briefly for your information, the Harbor Business Manager, which we're not currently proposing in this budget, his range is $61,000 to $74,000. The proposed Harbor Business Coordinator position is $51,000 to $62,000. This is yearly. And the Office Assistant 4 positions are $35,000 to $43,000. So those numbers, and again, my apologies for not including those. That is my report. We do have Susan Slayton here, Administrative Services Director, as well as Eric Indersby for any further information. I'm happy to answer questions.
That was a really cool report. Thank you very much. Do I understand that we have Eric, and then we have a business coordinator, and then we have one and three quarters office people in addition to that?
Currently, we don't have a harbor business coordinator, this position. We don't currently have a person. This budget is suggesting that that position be included in the budget. We currently have a harbor director, a vacant harbor business coordinator position in this requested funding, and one and three quarters OA4s.
So really the staffing remains the same. It's the one position that's been downgraded from business manager to business coordinator. Other than that, it's the same.
That's correct.
Okay. Carla?
Thank you. Thank you for the report and the clarification and the pay scale. I'm not much of an optimist, and so I'm somewhat doubtful that I want to count on the $250,000 being there. I know we heard from one of the speakers tonight that going back to our, you know, full-time OA4, and I think it was a year ago we filled that three-quarter time position, and I would support eliminating that position and just keeping those three people.
Okay, now I'm confused again. I thought I had this all figured out. So the harbor director is sitting right there. The business coordinator, if I have this figured out right, is the one full-time, would be filled by this person who is the one full-time OA4, right? With a bump in salary, which is how much?
I think the difference between your OA4 and your harbor business coordinator from top step to bottom step, which is how we would do it, is about $7,000.
Okay, that's what I saw. So this is just moving that person up, so to speak, right?
That would be the offer that's likely going to be the offer for that individual.
So we still have an OA4 who is three-quarter time. Now, what's the job description for that person three-quarter time?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
What does that person do?
And I'm going to turn that over to Mr. Indersby. I'm sure he can go into a little more detail than I can.
Thank you.
Good luck.
That position is now three-quarter time. It was filled by a full-time person. The two people, when we authorized the second OA at full-time, that initial position was filled at three-quarter time. the position, the person that was in the existing position, that's the longer-term position, went over to three-quarter time. She's basically front office, front counter, accounts receivable on the front end in terms of people coming in and paying, the primary contact for the public, both on the phone and into the office, doing the daily spreadsheets in terms of the accounts receivable and getting stuff to up to City Hall for deposits. Basically, sort of our frontline office assistant that does all the public contact up front.
You know, I have to agree with Carla. It seems to me there's no change. Other than taking the business manager from business manager to business coordinator, it's the exact same staffing down there. And, you know, I was under the impression that we were not going to fill the harbor business managers and that somebody down there would become the coordinator and that there would be another person. So, I mean, really nothing's changed other than reducing the payroll $7,000. So I'm with you, Carla. There should be a business coordinator and then another full-time person. That's where I would be supportive of. I'm a little more lenient than Carla as far as expecting the money. I mean, there's going to be one major scramble if the money doesn't come through, but I don't see them closing the plant next year. I mean, all the writing's on the wall that they will keep going and that we'll get paid. But there's a risk. There is a risk. Not as much as the risk that there was a month ago, because a month ago we were just basically, that money's not going to happen, and that's why we're back here with this now. So I don't feel that there's any major staffing change that's being suggested. Yes, staffing change, but not a major one. Not the loss of a position. And that's kind of what I was looking for. George?
No, excuse me. No, I think I'm just getting a feel of this, but I was under a different impression of how that was going to be handled, too. But I agree with you, Carla, that it doesn't look like there's going to be any change down here. So I'm supportive of what we're doing here. And I do have a feeling that I like to be an optimist. I'm really thinking that they're going to come through with the money. Anyway, like Bill says, we'll be scrambling if it doesn't. But
that's you guys will be scrambling.
You guys will be scrambling.
He's not awake.
Yeah.
Where are you on the staffing?
I'm fine.
With the way it's proposed?
Yes.
Okay. No.
Yeah, I appreciate Ms. Borcher's comments. I find myself concerned that we're setting ourselves up because that scramble is going to come regardless, almost definitely by 2015, because regardless of what happens over the next couple of years, yes, hopefully we will get those funds, but by 2015 we almost definitely will not. So this scramble would be coming, and recognizing that, I find my
responsibilities are not going to go away. They're still all going to need to be fulfilled with the existing staffing, no matter how we rearrange the boxes. As far as assuming the full-time OA moves into the Harbor Business Coordinator position, we've got and we're not refilling that OA position. We've now got left a three-quarter time OA position, which is the one you're talking about?
The concept that's on the table or being discussed is that three-quarter time turns into one full-time OA position with the business coordinator position. So those would be the two positions. The three-quarter time position would disappear.
Correct. So I understand that the only unknown in that is whether or not our existing three-quarter time person would want to go to full-time.
Hmm. Yeah, that's what I was curious to know.
Because she was full-time and went to three-quarter time within the last year. So that's the only unknown in that equation.
Councilmember Swann, if I may. I think that discussion, if the council is allocating a full-time position and reducing the Harbor Department by a three-quarter time position, certainly we can make changes with, if that employee isn't interested in that, there's a quarter time allocated that we can still use. So I would I would definitely not say we're not interested in the full-time OA4 position, just because our current employee may not want to work full-time. There's a quarter time left that certainly is workable. The other thing I want to add, just to make sure everyone's understanding, and I think that you are, is that what we're talking about is eliminating a position from the department, and know that with that elimination, we will also have a corresponding reduction in the budget. So it's important to note the budget that we've provided to you does show little staff change because that was our recommendation. With you, taking your information and recommendation, we'll then pull down the bottom line of the Harbor Department by about $50,000-$60,000. So what you'll do then is no longer need that $100,000 from the projected Dynegy funding, but you'll need about 40 or so. So I think that's an important note to make. We didn't propose less staffing, but we certainly understand where you're coming from, and with those changes that it looks like you're making, know that you're also changing the bottom line, so we're using less of the Dynegy money. Does that make sense?
It does, and I think for me that makes me feel more comfortable because the projections for revenue they're looking better, but we all understand that those are still hazy as well. And I'm cautious about putting ourselves in a position where we're depending on performance that may not actually happen. So I think this is a good way for us to take a cautious step into the next couple of years and retain the ability to make adjustments as necessary.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I don't know if this is for Andrea or Eric or both of you. What would happen if we kept it sort of the way this looks like, where we had Eric as the director, we move our full-time up to the business coordinator, she's full-time, she gets the raise or whatever, and we keep the other OA4 at three-quarter time, at least for now? Would you be able to function that way, or do you need us to make that change from three-quarter to full-time?
I think what we're asking for you to do is just eliminate the three-quarter time position. Eliminate the position. We have a full-time position left, and we will handle how we staff that. Certainly, we won't eliminate the person that's in the three-quarter time position now. I would be very concerned if we lost a position and a quarter at the Harbor Department. I think they'll be hard-pressed to deal with the position. They will and they can, but a position and a quarter is just 10 more hours of non-staff.
When you keep talking about eliminating a position, are you talking about the business manager?
No, you're eliminating from what I'm hearing the council, you're eliminating an OA4 position. You're eliminating a position from the Harbor Department.
At three-quarter.
You're going back to staffing levels of 92, 93. That's what I'm hearing. And that reduces your bottom line by another $60,000.
But aren't we taking the full-time position?
I would have to take exception. I've said it here publicly before. 92, 93, we had Harbor Director, and then we had Susan. And Susan, maybe not 93, maybe not even 92. Well, 92, I'll say. 91 for sure was halftime. I remember the scramble to get her on full-time. There was nobody else down there. And then you had Dick Rogers, and you had the Harbor Patrol. And I think the last time we talked about this, I said that's when Marina Square was built. There was a lot that got done during that time with considerably less staff.
A three-quarter time OA4. So I apologize. You're not eliminating an entire position. You're eliminating a three-quarter time position.
If that's what we end up doing. All right, I'll start back with you again.
Yeah. Exactly the intent. And so just to bounce off Councilmember Smuckler is that, I'm hopeful then, the new council is going to have this before them. And if Dynegy does pay and we have that money come mid-year, you'll have the opportunity to revisit this and fund that beach truck we eliminated and some of the other things that will allow you to do that by eliminating that three-quarter time position and freeing that money up in the budget also. And as else we're doing, to me, is stepping back to where we were a year ago, because a year ago we funded that three-quarter time position. A year ago, the OA4 that's there three-quarter time worked full-time, and you had Sue and Eric. So, you know, we added that. We're just taking it back away.
And that does put it in a different light. Nancy, anything on over here? You make the motion.
I will move, let's see what I'm moving, approval of, help me out here, C1 with the change to the staffing included in this to fund the harbor coordinator position and one OA4 with the elimination of the one full-time and elimination of one OA4 three-quarter time position.
Second.
Discussion.
And that's clear in the motion, that's the business coordinator.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. C2, Joe.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. In front of you is a report that you asked the staff to bring back from your June 26th meeting. It is a discussion on the solar-powered trash compactors that staff proposed to put out at the Rock parking lot due to the ongoing trash concerns at that location. Currently, there are 16 trash receptacles at that site, and staff has improved some trash collection by having in-house staff at Harbor to pick up trash on Sundays. Note that we did bring to your attention there are 7 concrete pads that have been placed out there, and that was in part of the Harbor's efforts to improve the area. They've added some new trash receptacles on those pads, and right now there are 2 trash receptacles to each pad. We're proposing that we eliminate all 16 trash receptacles and we bring in 4 big belly trash units that will be a trash compactor joined with a recycling unit next to it, very similar, and actually very similar to the ones we have at Mariner Park, as well as Tidelands and Centennial Parkway. This would do 2 things. It would eliminate 12 cans out of the service, and it would also increase your recycling availability for participants out there. Right now, they use the recycling dumpster that next to the restroom, and this would allow for a single-user recycling unit closer to where the participants are parking their cars and closer to the beach. We gave you some estimates on cost. This is geared towards a unit that is serviced 3 times a week in the wintertime and also 6 times in the summer months. Those numbers basically cost about a little over $1,200 a year. We've outlined the cost for 4 big bellies, which is the ratio that we proposed earlier, with the payback of about a little over 2 years. It's a 4-to-1 ratio, and it's about $30,000 to put those units in place. The cost savings is a little under $15,000. So given the fact that it's $30,000 capital and about a $15,000 savings, you have about a $15,000 deficit that you need to come up with as far as an allocation to implement this plan at 4-to-1. And we are recommending that you keep it at 4-to-1. You certainly could go higher if you'd wish. There are 7 pads out there, like I said. You would be increasing our return on investment greater than the average 2 years that we're looking at. Thank you.
Why wouldn't you just go ahead and get the 4 cost $30,000?
Yeah, well, we did the when you look at the cost for the units themselves, the tax and the freight to get them here, that is the cost.
Well, it's all 8 in the fewer garbage collections. Seems like a win-win.
That's how we penciled it out.
You get everything, everybody's happy. They're solar powered, right?
Yeah. Solar powered, and the ones we have out there now, greater than 3 years, and we've had 0 additional maintenance on them, and they've actually increased our efficiency in those sites tremendously.
Zero maintenance is a good thing. Noah?
Yeah, just questions come up since the last meeting, and I was wondering, are these units covered in our insurance plan? I've read about an increase in vandalism and theft, particularly when it comes to precious metals, valuable metals, and so on. Would these units, if there was some sort of theft on them, would they be covered in an insurance plan for the city?
It's just metals.
I would jump in and say that they would be, obviously any assets that we have would be covered on our insurance. Whether the amount of damage would be greater than our deductible would be a part of our investigative work on that vandalism. So it would be something that would be tough to answer right now, but I would imagine that the extent of the damage, they would be qualified as city property.
Yeah, and you did mention the concept of going for all seven and filling those pads. I find myself tempted by that because there's so much space out there. I like to think that the coverage of four would work, but that's a really big change from what we currently have out there. And, yeah, I think it'd be worthwhile to talk a little bit about going above four, just because we want to make sure that they're visible and that people, we don't have a little mini riot out there because of the...
precious metals?
Because of the availability of a vessel. So I'm interested to hear from the rest of the council. Obviously, there's a payback on this investment. By buying more, it draws it out a little bit longer, but we'll recoup those funds. So for me, I feel like we should go for the best case scenario because it isn't really all that much money in the big scheme of things.
So the four of these, it still leaves trash receptacles out there, normal ones that have to be picked up.
No, we would be taking all 16 away from that site and relocating those to other locations along the Embarcadero, which probably need to be replaced. Some of them are a little bit worn, and these units the harbor's provided are relatively new. So we would relocate the newer ones to replace the older ones, and out at the site at the rock parking lot, you'd have one double unit at the restroom, and then three of the remaining units that would be placed strategically on the seven existing pads, leaving four pads empty. You get three filled and four pads empty, but right now they're double receptacles, and we're adding, would have one receptacle and a recycling unit, so... We would fill the pad.
Thanks. Where are you going to put the other four?
They would fill the remaining pads. The other three.
Do we need more than four out there?
That's hard to say. Right now, our ratio is given our direction to come back with something that was what we talked about with about a two-year payback is our 4-to-1. Now, geographically, you could bring an argument that says more units would be more feasible and more convenient for users at that site. Our ratio at Mariner was 2-to-1 because of the location. We didn't need any more, and that was sufficient for that site. Now, you have a larger site at the Rock parking lot, and so convenience is something to be considered.
I could be talked into this, Noah. I'm going to stretch out the debt for another year. I mean... Whatever. George?
Yes, I'm with Noah on this. I don't know how far he went on this, but I feel like four is not going to be enough. Yeah. And another question was brought up by Noah about vandalism or theft. Can these things be secured down or how?
They certainly would be secured down. They've got all thread anchor bolts that'll go through, and we'll be connecting them to the concrete pads that are out there, so they'll be stationary and permanent in place.
I think we should really take a hard look at this getting all seven. That's how I feel anyway. I'm just gonna let it go right there.
So seven with $50,000, 15, 34, so 3.5 years.
Right. Currently, you have seven pads. Realizing that you'd have six on those pads, still leaving one vacant because you still have one site at the restroom that we're proposing. So, if you wanted to fill all seven pads, you could do that. You'd have to have an eighth unit at the restroom.
Sorry to interrupt.
Well, you can leave one pad empty, either way.
Could you remind us again of the where you get actual break on per unit, the quantity for a break? It is such a long distance there, and we see such a volume of people, and we are talking about a very significant change in vessels available. So 7 to me would be much more adequate coverage.
And, I hear
and we can pay it back.
And I'm going to support it, and now we're to you, Nancy.
Well, considering the budget and all such things, I was going to be conservative and stick with 4 and see what happens in a year if we've actually been able to start repaying back some of the money. But it looks like we have the votes to go for 7. So I'm just going to sit here and be quiet.
Carla.
Yeah, I agree with Nancy. As much as I, you know, want to hold hands and sing around the big bellies, I am concerned about borrowing. Anytime we take any money from our reserves, I know we're borrowing it. I don't like touching the reserves for any reason other than what they're intended for, and I understand the repayment. And, you know, I don't know if there's any comments or concerns or questions or anything that Ms. Slayton would want to throw our way in regards to the any issues with finance doing it that way. Is there any?
Good evening. Obviously, you're using your reserves, and your reserves, with all the dedications that you've made this year, have now lowered them down to exactly the 27.5% of the general fund operating budget. But that's a very healthy reserve. And so if council wants to use it for something like this, I think this is a very good idea. Because we will see a return on investment, the money will return to the reserve as we see this. So I think it would be a very good thing to do.
Thank you. Turned it off. I can appreciate wanting to fill all or 6 of the 7 pads, and you know, the more the better. We don't have trash around, but that's a lot of money. You're talking almost $60,000 now. We went from $30,000 to $60,000 for trash cans. That's a lot of money for trash cans. So.
We could entertain the idea, because I would expect the implementation and installation of this is going to come after this summer season. Would that be about the timing? How soon would you expect we could install these?
Well, if council approved any number of big belly receptacles, we would move on this as soon as our resources were available, I would say within the month. And it's going to be probably 6 to 8 weeks on delivery, so we're looking at probably 2 or 3 months before we implement them, so it would be after the summer months.
So we could start with the 4 and know that we could really keep an eye on it, and if it looks like 4 is not getting us by during the winter and off season, then we could up the number in preparation for the real prime time summer season. What do you think about that?
You want to be first? I think that's probably a really good idea, since we won't even be able to get these until we're pretty close to the end of the summer. So if we get 4 now and then see what happens, and you know, we could get 4 more before next summer, probably. You know, if we begin to see some return on our investment.
Okay.
I think it helps, too, in case you run into finding out that this, for some unknown reason, is not going to be successful, and what your goal is, you haven't gone out, and not that they couldn't be placed somewhere else. And that brings me to a question that was asked at the last meeting to Mr. Woods, or there was going to be a follow-up on, is there an issue with the garbage company service picking up? Because I know there was some comments Ms. Burlingame made about some receptacles that were picked up free, and you guys were going to look into whether or not that was at the Rock, or if that had an effect on that.
Yeah, there is an allocation in the contract or the agreement that there's the garbage company would provide 30 cans of service at no charge, plus 30 recycling units. And those 30 could be any units that we selected, from what I understand. So we tried to look at this, and if we took out 16 and put in 4, we have another 12 units out there that meet the criteria of 3 services in the winter and 6 in the summer. So the cost allocations and the return that we've projected here would remain the same.
Right. Okay. Ready for a motion? All right. I move we approve the purchase of 4 Big Belly solar power trash compactor recycling units for the Rock parking lot from the reserve fund, with the conditions that those cost return would go back to repay the reserve fund, and that we review the performance.
I think we should go for the 7 right away, because, you know, you guys forget, you know, weekends are weekends in Morro Bay, and we also have a lot of holidays, February, some January, March. I mean, we got times when this town is full. And, we're going to have other fish to fry. Why don't we just put this thing to bed and get it done?
I can support that. I'm going to support what the majority wants to do here, whether it's 4 or 7. But I could definitely get behind the 7. You've got 4 Big Bellies out there, and then you've got a bunch of non-Big Bellies that, you know, it's doing a half. Yeah.
In the scenario, there's only Big Bellies out there.
Not with 4.
Yes, with 4.
Yeah.
You take everything else away. Okay.
But it's not enough. It's not going to be enough. Do you think so, Joe?
I think that you'll be stretched rather thin, and Harbor staff has also agreed with that observation that 4 out there, which is basically 3 along the riprap, would be rather thin for participants and visitors utilize.
That's all we need to do is be thin again, you know. I disagree.
You're the one, you know where they are.
You're the one that wish for she over here.
You're the swing guy.
Well, I made a motion. I would amend it for that date.
Pardon me?
I would amend it to include the date of, let's say, the first meeting of February.
And you're going to stick with your 4.
And what sense is that? I mean, we can do it back in February?
5? Okay. Do you want me to amend this? I'll amend it.
Why don't you amend
it? Seconded yet, so you can withdraw. You can do whatever you want.
Okay, let's go for 5. That's the one. Okay, I move that we approve the purchase of 5 Big Belly solar compactor trash and recycling units for the Rock parking lots to be funded through and returned to the reserve fund, general fund, and that we receive a report from the department regarding their performance by March 2013 to evaluate whether more need to be added.
First meeting in March, may I suggest?
Sure.
I'm not here. I mean, I don't care, but if you want time to get it done.
We went from 4 now to 5.
Went to 5.
Yeah. I'll second
that. Kind of a compromise.
Can I second that? Get it going.
You have seconded it.
I have seconded that.
Yeah. So once you say second, you don't have to
answer. I did that. Yeah. All right.
All right. Do we need to discuss this anymore?
No.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back.
You almost had.
We returned more to the our reserve. You found that? Yeah, we returned another.
Yeah.
Here's your main event, Andrea, C3.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. You originally heard this item in April and asked staff to come back with a further recommendation on the purchase of iPads or paperless agenda concept. Basically, based on research, we're recommending that the council authorize the purchase of iPads for the city council members as well as department heads. The recommended device is the iPad 3 with 32 gigabytes of memory. We're also recommending using a wireless connection for data instead of individual data plans. The city currently has wireless connections available at City Hall and at the Veterans Hall that would be able to be used for downloading, as well as people who in their home have wireless accessibility. It is important to note that there might be a possible upgrade needed for the wireless connection here for bandwidth at the Veterans Hall, but certainly these iPads are not the only device that would be beneficial if we included the bandwidth here at the Veterans Hall. We could also use that for public events as well as the radio station that's talking about coming here. We're looking at the cost for the increased bandwidth here, and it's probably about $1,200 a year. So, again, an issue that's come up between the staff report and the time of writing and now, but I don't think it's a showstopper, certainly. If you do authorize this purchase this evening, we'll move ahead with securing training opportunities for users, and we'll also fine-tune the city's information systems policy to address specifics such as how much agenda materials can be distributed and what, if any, restrictions need to be placed on the use. The estimated cost will not exceed $10,000, and that's for 12 iPads with a few programs for manipulating council materials, for taking notes, as well as a protection plan and screen guards. And I sent out an email today at a request of Councilmember Smuckler for payback, and we estimate that it's about $3,300 a year estimated for the cost of producing in the agenda, and that includes staffing as well as paper costs and copying costs. And so our payback is going to be about 2.5 years on these iPads. The amount of time iPads, or the life of an iPad, really, it's all over the place with information out there. Some people say 3 to 4 years. Some people say 5 to 6 years. Probably what's going to be happening is they'll become outdated before they'll actually wear out. But we're looking at an average of 4 to 5 years for use. Our recommendation this evening is, if you choose to fund this, that we could certainly fund it for the general the general fund reserve. About half of it would be general fund, the other half would be enterprise funds, and it's about $10,000, not to exceed $10,000, probably slightly less. That's what I have. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Carla.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrea, for bringing this back too. I appreciate it. It's kind of seems to be the trend that a lot of jurisdictions are going to. I know at some of my other meetings that I sit on committees representing the city, they also are in discussion at IWMA and some other groups about switching to iPads and things so that it works more streamlined with the county process and others. Question the upgrade here, can that be funded through the PEG access money?
I believe so. We haven't explored that too much, but I think that's probably a justified use of the PEG access funds.
So then that would cover that as far as this and enable other users in here also to have access, which I think is just kind of a trend of the future. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't believe this item really has anything to do with the need for the extra bandwidth. The driving force of that extra bandwidth is actually coming from the streaming of our meetings now through the new station that's been created. They've mentioned this as a possible add-on that could be an issue, but in reality, when you're using your iPad here, you've already downloaded your packet before you got here, so you're not really using that bandwidth for that. So I certainly believe it they're not related, and really the bandwidth is part of the PEG access because we're providing that other avenue as opposed to providing it for the wireless for the iPads. We're actually providing it for that other service to provide streaming of our live meetings. So it could be used for PEG access.
Councilmember Borchardt, just one addition to that. I talked to AGP this afternoon, and Mr. Schultz is not aware of this, but their one concern with the iPads is certainly you probably wouldn't download your agenda packet here, but if there was a situation and it could be remote that you needed to look at, let's say, even like a Google Map or Google Earth or something related to your agenda packet that you brought up on your iPad, they do have some concerns with the possibility of that. So I think there's a little bit of a possibility that it could affect, probably not in terms of downloading your documents, though.
Okay. I like the idea of moving towards this. I mean, change is hard. We're moving kind of forward and taking a leap, and I look forward to me, if we approve this, an opportunity to make that change and move forward. And I just hope we can get there. And I'm a dinosaur, too, so I have to learn, too.
Nancy.
Well, I'm an even older dinosaur than Councilmember Borchardt. But as you probably know, I've been practicing with mine. And as my daughter calls me, a techno nerd, I can't do it. Whatever it is, I'm disabled. I have disabilities in terms, dysfunctional, yes. I can't even talk tonight. But in terms of technological things, yet, I've found it really easy to use. I am able to download my CapSlo agenda, which is about that thick if you get one, and my EVC committee agenda, which is about that thick, and I take those with me to the meeting. Still not as good as Mr. Livick is over there at making notes on my pad, but I can see that coming. I think it's the wave of the future, and I think it's a good way to go. So I'm totally in favor of doing this.
I support it. George?
Well, I see we can eliminate one big belly right now. We get rid of all this paper.
You could thin it out.
Right. Does this work the same way now? You guys are saving this money so you can actually pay this money back? Just like the big bellies?
Yes.
Good. I like to hear that.
Are they solar?
Well, to talk about dinosaurs, well, I am the oldest dinosaur, so.
Barely.
Just barely. But if I can, I might be able to handle it.
You'll do great, George. Noah?
Well, I don't know what's six. I must be a big Luddite because I'm really nervous about this.
You don't need him.
Yeah, my vote doesn't really count.
You really have to learn how to do the notes.
Yeah.
You screwed up the big bellies, you know.
I guess I do want to bring up an idea, because looking at the breakdown and this return on investment question, it looks like the majority of the savings is staff time. So we still are going to have those expenses, about $3,000 of the $3,300. So there's, from what I saw, an estimated about $300 savings in hard costs and $3,000 in staff time. So how do we get payback on this?
Well, I guess the concept is that your staff time is going to, you're going to be doing other things that aren't getting done now. So, you know, I mean, I guess it was a little tongue-in-cheek to say, yes, it's a return investment. It certainly is. Your staff is going to be dedicated to other things. I know we felt like that $3,300 is a pretty conservative estimate. We spend more time on that, and we may spend more actually hard costs on that. But it was an estimate, because we don't keep track of that. So, you know, your return on investment is supplies would probably be 5 years, but I think your dedicated staff to that is going to be significant, and you know, more efficiency, I guess, is probably a big savings as well.
And how confident are you that we could fund the modem, the additional modem that's necessary? Well, I think I would disagree a little bit with the attorney on this, that modem's not being required by the radio station's addition, because in conversation with AGP and the radio, there's ways that they can provide radio streaming with the current system. It's more about the draw from people like Mr. Schultz and others in the room that are utilizing the modem as we go through, and that it's very much borderline for them to be able to provide streaming and the coverage just with the existing capabilities. So it does seem very obvious that we need to expand our bandwidth for this facility, for the Vets Hall itself. How confident are you that the PEG funding could help us cover that?
Well, I've got a voice behind me that says absolutely, and I haven't heard Mr. Schultz shake the table or anything no, so I think it would be absolutely a good use of PEG access funds, and we have funds to pay for that. The estimate is $1,200, $100 a month. I think that's probably even a little bit liberal. That just came to me today. So, but it sounds like it needs to be done regardless of what we do with the iPads.
Okay. So I guess I'll just say that I could be drug out of my cave, I will come out of my cave, put my pencil down, my charcoal, and I just think it is important that we have some measurements as we go into this, so we really are taking a look at it and make sure that it's penciling out and that it's making sense, because we will get to a point where we have to decide whether to buy a whole new round of these or not. And if we could have some ability to measure the effectiveness, and then I think the point of some protocol for use, boundaries for use, and to have that sort of document and baseline established in the beginning too would be good.
They're public computer. I mean, it's once anything's on there, you know, you're subject to public records request on anything in there. So I think that there's going to be a lot of discretion by the users.
And do we get to keep these when we leave office?
No. Sorry.
What kind of boundaries are you talking about?
Well, I think it's obvious. It's like you're signing a contract, I would imagine. Or is there actually going to be a contract as you check these out? You sign saying, well, I realize that this is property of the city. And
what I anticipate we'll do is add a section to the we'll need a use policy. We're not going to invent something new. There's many of them already that have been done for other cities. So we'll look at different cities, do a little bit of research. I would anticipate that it becomes part of your council policies and procedures manual, the things that you abide by. I don't think we'll sign something, but you'll understand that, you know, it is there are some use guidelines of what you can and can't download.
Okay. I see myself still printing up some documents, particularly those that are going to be ongoing, and having some paper just to make me feel comfortable. That would be on my own dime then at this point going forward. Is that the what we are supportive of?
Cats in cyberspace forever.
We have some comments from our city manager.
We're still going to be printing up some paper packets for certain things. I'm the newspaper, so there's still going to be some that's done. We looked at that when we made our estimate and included that. If there's a document that a council member wants in paper, we're certainly going to provide that. That's not going to. I don't feel that's going to be on your own dime. I mean,
25 cents a
coffee.
Well, I wouldn't abuse that, but I think it is important to have as an option.
Can I hear a motion approving item C3?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Arr. Opposed? Motion carries 4-1. D1, Susan.
Good evening. I'm going to be, as usual, very short and sweet with my presentation.
So
you have before you the master fee schedule, and I'm here to answer any questions that you might have about it.
No.
Yeah, I don't have any questions.
George? Nancy?
I do, and it's some... Sorry, yes. It came up during public comment, and I think Mr. Barta made some good points. I know we have to have impact fees, at least some of them, to pay our bills, but if somebody who wants to build a house could know up front what these fees are going to be rather than, I mean, you look at this, and I was trying to figure out if I wanted to build a 3,000 square foot house or 2,000 square foot, she says, I have to have a smaller house. You know, what would it cost me by the time you figure out so many cents per square foot for this, yet then there's staff time for something else? And I'm not against paying the fees, but I would love to see those fees broken down so that people who want to build something, whether it's a home or a commercial venture, I mean, hopefully we'll get somebody to build a commercial venture around here, they know going in what it's going to cost without having to do all this high-level math. Is that reasonable?
May I make a suggestion?
Please.
This is revisions to the master fee schedule. I think that you're talking about a different thing, and the next item declaration, I would support you bringing bringing that back kind of as a separate thing for Rob and his department. Basically, it's you. So it's going to cost you $47,000 in fees. That's what we're looking for.
So you're talking about a future agenda item.
Well, I don't see how that this is relevant to this. Do you want to say something? No?
I was only going to say that I believe Mr. Leavitt can shed some light that we're already currently doing that.
Oh, yeah?
Usually on projects, the first question we get asked is how much in fees is this going to cost? And we have an estimate sheet that we provide to every applicant, estimate of their fees for their building. They have to provide us with some basic information like what size it is, what size water meter they're going to need, and then we provide them back with that fee estimate, as typically on most construction, it's the first order of business that somebody comes in and asks us for is what the fee estimate is going to be.
So it's being done.
Okay, then I'm happy.
Okay.
That's all.
Are you okay increasing the impact fees?
Do I have a choice?
CPI increase only?
Yeah, well, I mean, my preference on this would be I'm okay with approving the increases. You know I'm basically against it, but I get your argument that, you know, we put up increases and for 5 years, then you got to do a big increase. So, and most of them are nickel and dime. You know, I brought up recently doing away with residential impact fees entirely to try to spur some construction. Impact fees are an issue with builders. 2,000 square foot home right now, we've got $25,000 in just in impact fees, and we've heard, you know, over $30,000 before you even blink an eye. So I'm not supportive of raising our impact fees schedule at all, but I could be the
I would support that.
I would agree with you.
Ah, great.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
Is it down to me?
I'm sorry, Colin.
No, that's okay. I know that the city manager had been working with a group in regards to, you know, specifically, I know we're talking about the master fee schedule, but specific to the building department and including in that the fees and how those things are presented. And so Mr. Leavitt had just said they're working on that, and I guess I'll wait till after because it'll get off the subject of master fee when that will be coming. So I'll wait.
How about throwing in the planning fees as well?
Not raising them?
Yeah.
Holding the line on them for the year?
Yeah.
Down
here.
I didn't hear what you said.
No increases on planning or impact fees, building impact fees.
Planning fees. Well, I don't like any increase in any fees, so. Anything I can get, I'll take.
Well, then we got you on board. So that leaves you, Noah.
Yeah, I actually am not in favor of that. I think we've just talked about increasing the planning position, the planner position, to a higher level potentially, and these fees are the thing that actually help fund that and help provide a quality planning department, and then of course the infrastructure and services we need. So it's a 2% increase. I think by postponing this, we're setting it up to be a more of a hit at some point down the road. I think there's other ways to reduce costs of building and construction, and I'd prefer to explore those avenues rather than this.
Well, you know, planning, these fees were increased 500% about 3-4 years ago. So I think we need to do whatever we can to
Yeah, it's time for a break.
It's time to put on the brakes. Come on.
So I'll move approval of item D1 with the exception of all building impact fees and planning fees. Boy, then I'm thinking of fire hookups and stuff, but I'll leave it at that.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1. Declaration of future agenda items. Carla?
I would just, I guess, either refer to the city manager, Mr. Leivick, to ask if there is a planned time that information is coming back on the planning process permitting fee.
So the planning study committee group? It's the next thing on the list after the budget issue. So it's close. Probably August, September. Probably
thank
August.
You. Okay, thank you. That's all I wanted.
Nancy?
I have no future agenda items, but I have two questions. Updates from staff, please. Mr. Leivick, when are we going to see pavement on our roads?
I think I have the same frustration that most people have in town with this contractor. I can't even give you a date. The only date that we've heard from them is tomorrow or later this week. We're supposed to be getting a revised schedule, and their time limit on this contract runs out July 25th. So before they get into real dollars for their liquidated damages. So I have really very little faith in the performance of this contractor being able to get this work done. I could be surprised, and they could get in here next week and get every street done, but I have no real answer for you.
Surprises are nice, but they don't always happen. One other point. Are they still paying the fees, the daily, whatever it was, liquidation?
Liquidated damages?
Yes.
Well, they don't pay them until the end of the contract period, which is July 25th.
But they're still adding up.
They're adding up for the commercial streets. On the residential streets, they won't start adding up until July 25th.
Thank you.
Yes.
You have our sympathy.
Follow-up question. After July 25th, then, do we have the ability, I guess the question is the city attorney, to can we go to the next highest bid on the contractors, or do we have to go out to bid again?
I'm not sure. We'd have to look at it and see how we can handle that through the public contracts code.
And I would ask for support to bring a resolution forward regarding council's direction on how Measure Q funds are allocated and spent. Thank you. George?
Well, I don't know if this has been already said, but we still got a real parking problem down on the Embarcadero on that south side. For those business people down there, I'd like to be able to start talking about what we got in mind, or do we have a solution? If we could get some parking down there for them people, their businesses, they like we could have some people down there hanging on. I think it would make a tremendous difference. So I'd like to see us start talking about it again. What to do for that parking area down there.
I'll support you if you'll tell me where you're talking about.
I'm talking about, like, when I say the south.
What's the south?
That's kind of like, maybe I should say the center, the Embarcadero. I consider myself up there.
Like between beach and harbor and on down
yeah,
to
harbor,
Pacific.
Harbor and Pacific, yeah.
That
seems to be a real problem there. Now that we've... You know, we lost a parking lot when we sold. I still call it Brannigan's Reef, but to Saltwasser there, and we lost that parking lot. And there's some severe problems down there, and there's a possibility that we're going to have to go in there and limit parking. No meters, please. But, you know, and I've been guilty of it myself. I go down to my office and, you know, where are you going to park? Right in front there. And
George.
I know. But maybe all this has to be looked at. I mean, considering all the parking
issue,
here.
The agenda item is to bring back a report on parking options in the mid block area on the Embarcadero.
Roger that one.
Killjoy. Noah?
Yeah, we didn't follow up at the last meeting about the Citizens Oversight Committee concept that was brought up for the police department.
I'm willing to discuss that.
Okay.
I don't think that's a bad idea. I'll bet you. No? No?
Yeah, and I'll support Noah Mike Alley.
It's just the concept.
For discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Just discussing. And that ain't gonna hurt.
Not going to hurt anything.
Okay, and then another item.
You only get one.
Another item is in regards to our temporary use permits, and I had talked with the city attorney about this as an issue that has come up, and would like to discuss the process and licensing of temporary use permits and how it relates to the existing businesses, the brick-and-mortar businesses and the impacts of temporary use permits on those businesses.
Just a discussion.
Yeah.
For starters.
Yeah.
You need staff time on this? What do you...
I think the city attorney understands where I'm coming from on it, and he could develop a very simple report.
Fine. I'm good. Who has his microphone hand on? You?
I was going to... I just need clarification on one thing if you're done with future agenda items.
Well, let's finish. Make sure we got. Oh, I can see he's got another one.
No.
Then all right. He's looking for support. I mean, I can support this as a discussion item. I mean, that's. There's no direction here yet. If you just wanted it so we can talk about it, that's cool.
I would support it if it's at the discretion timeline of the city attorney who's busy.
Yeah, it's a simple one.
I don't know why we need Rob, you know, doing anything on this. It's discussion.
It's just bringing forth the ordinance and the procedure that one has to do to obtain temporary use permit and seeing if you want to make any changes to the ordinance. It's real basic staff report. Not going to take more than a half hour to hour time.
Half an hour to an hour. Okay.
Great.
All right. We'll support it. Anything else from council? Yes, Andrea.
Just clarification, Mayor Yates, on your resolution of how Measure Q funds are allocated and spent. Is that something you're going to be providing to us?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else from council? Anything from staff? Thank you all very much. Thank you for being here tonight. Dawn, good night.